Wanda's Picks, a Black Arts and Culture program of the African Sisters Media Network, and we're calling on our ancestors this morning, as we do, perhaps not necessarily consciously every moment of every day, but today we are joined in the studio by Bryant B. Bowling, and he is going to be telling us about Black Like Me in America, A Musical Journey Through Slavery. And I thought, oh, how apropos. We definitely have to play Spirit of the Dead, Rise Up, and Claim Your Story, because, you know, we got, you know, an expert in the studio. And we're also joined in the studio by a marvelous poet, Brother Derek, or Matt Kwan, as he likes to be called. Good morning. How are you?
I'm blessed. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing excellent, excellent.
Yes.
So,
yes, good morning, Wanda. How are you doing today? It's good to be back on the show.
Yeah, it's always good to have you. So I'm going to read your bio, Bryant, and then you could tell us about how you met Brother Matt Kwan. And Brother Matt Kwan, you could tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll talk about this wonderful, wonderful musical journey through slavery, Black Like Me in America. It sort of it reminds me of that book by a person who's not black. Every time I see the title, I think, but this is a black person, a real black person, not one that's got, took drugs to make his skin dark and used shoe polish where it didn't work, and then had to go in the house and let the medicine wear off because it just was too much being black like me in America when you aren't black like me. So, Brother Bryant holds a Master's of Arts degree in African-centric musicology and a Bachelor's of Science degree in music education. He has been performing and lecturing and educating the masses on the history of black people in America for the past 30 years. He has been commissioned to write several productions that address social issues in America. As a Fulbright scholar, he studied in Kenya and Tanzania, East Africa. And I'm going to let him tell us about To Be New production. That's a nice name. And it's presenting Black Like Me in America, A Musical Journey Through Slavery, for Black History Month this year. And it's actually going to be performed this Sunday at Joyce Gordon Gallery. Uh-oh, I hear some other talking.
Okay.
Let's see. Is that on your end?
That was on Mac Kwan's end, but...
Okay, all right. I just muted him for a minute. Let's see. Where was I? Oh, In the piece, why don't I just let you tell us about the piece about Joshua, who takes us through this journey. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Okay. Yeah, and I also want to...
Thanks again for inviting me on your show this morning.
Sure. No problem. Before,
I just
want to
mention the name To Be New production. is a name that I received from my late brother, Jamibu Bowling, who had a organization in the Washington, D.C. area called To Be New Institute. And To Be New is a term that's very similar to the term Sankofa, means to be born again, to become new again. And that's why we wanted to continue with that theme in our community here in the Oakland East Bay area, and that's why we started a production company called To Be New Productions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to let our audience know also that the last time you were on the air, you were in line at a You were auditioning to sing on a program, but then that weekend you also had a special concert honoring Leon Thomas. How did that go?
Oh, that was a wonderful concert. Thanks for asking. It was a wonderful concert. It was with M.B. Hanis the Sound Voyagers, and we performed that concert last year at the 57th Street Jazz Gallery.
Yeah, interesting that you mentioned M.B. Hanif. I think he has a concert this weekend there.
That is correct. As a matter of fact, I am a guest vocalist this evening.
No, for real?
At the 57th Street Gallery. So I'm
going
to be leaving shortly to go to a rehearsal with Hanif, and we're going to plan to play start our first set around 8:30 this evening.
Nice. Oh, I might try to get over there. Oh, that's cool.
Right.
Well, that's just like serendipity is just too much. So tell us about this story, Black Like Me in America, Musical Journey Through Slavery. And it's so funny, at the rehearsal where I saw a little preview, you mentioned that you weren't even aware that this was the 150th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation and the 50th anniversary of Martin King's I Have a Dream speech.
Isn't that something? I tell you, Wanda, something was haunting me back starting the summer of last year, and something kept edging me on in my mind, saying, now, you have to gear up for Black History Month 2013. And, you know, being a creative artist here in America and being an African-American artist, Black History Month, February, traditionally has been a time when artists of the African American culture can really exhibit their work and get more bookings, because if they're doing themes or productions on the history of our people, it's an apropos time to do that. So something kept urging me on, and I didn't know why, but I said, let me go forward with it. And I've been doing for years lectures and presentations and concerts on the Black American experience using the Negro spirituals. But this time around, I was urged to kind of tweak it a little bit and to make it into a dramatical presentation.
Mm-hmm.
So I came up with a character named Joshua. And Joshua is a newly emancipated person who was enslaved here in America for over 30 years. And Joshua recounts his life in slavery, but he takes it back before he actually became a slave. Actually, you know, Wanda, we wasn't slaves. We were people who were enslaved. And I think that's an important message that we need to continue to tell our youth and tell ourselves, that we were not slaves. We were people who were forced into slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Joshua recounts his life, and he goes back and recalls his life in Africa. And he talks about how the customs and the games and the love and appreciation the people had for each other in Africa. And then he recalls his tragic journey through the Middle Passage and the condition the Middle Passage had with it, and all the people who died in the bowels of the ships on his journey here to America. Once he arrives to America, he talks about how he was branded twice, once with the name of the ship he rode on, and when he arrived in America, he was branded again with the name of the plantation he was sold off to. Mm-hmm. And he talks about his life on the plantation, how we had one code of conduct that we did when we was in front of the overseer and the master, but there was a different, more beloved, a more caring, appreciative attitude that we had among one another when the overseer and master wasn't around. And it's important that we understand that. We were a community back then, and we were extended family. So I try to bring some of those nuances out in the production and on that we're going to be doing on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you definitely do that. And I know one of the comments on Wednesday evening at the rehearsal from one of your guests was that the show of resistance to enslavement, you know, how do you keep people enslaved for, you know, nearly 400 years, and how do you keep them subdued like that and they don't try to resist? And you mentioned that actually you do bring up you know, some of the resistance and some of the rebellions that happened during this period of chattel slavery, and you mentioned some historic names, and don't forget to tell our audience about the wonderful visuals that you have that accompany this wonderful musical journey. I mean, it's not a wonderful journey, but
so
it's wonderful.
So fortunate to have a slide presentation that's acts as a backdrop to my monologue. So when I'm talking about my experiences acting the part of Joshua and he recalling his life in Africa, we have some wonderful images of the people of Africa and their customs and the things that they did there in Africa. Also, we have images of the Middle Passage and of slavery life here in America. We do give a disclaimer at the beginning of our presentation because some of the images are very emotional and disturbing. Mm-hmm. So we do give a disclaimer at the beginning for our audience to prepare for some of the images that may see during the presentation.
Right, right. And you have this wonderful accompanist, and he is just phenomenal on the piano. I mean, he's like a character within himself. You know, the music is a character within the piece itself, and he is just so phenomenal the way he, you know, there are moments where, you know, the music takes over because the character is acting, you know, through, like particularly when you put on the chains, like when he's captured,
right.
When Joshua's captured, that's like, oh, my God, it's like that was the meltdown period for me. It's like, ah. Yeah,
yeah, I do want to give much props to my accompanist, Mr. Benjamin Jones. He's affiliated with Cornerstone Church that's here right off of MacArthur in the Fruitvale District.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Jones, me and Ben have been working very diligently for the last several weeks, almost every day. We're still refining and just dotting our I's and brushing and crossing our T's. And Ben has been just over-the-top, extraordinarily supportive of this production. And the arrangements that we're doing for the pieces are co-arranged by myself and Mr. Jones.
Mm-hmm.
So I do want to give him all the props. He's a wonderful pianist, and he's very much have invested his time and his energy to ensure that this production is going to be a success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you also have poetry by, you know, Langston Hughes and Claude McKay and County Cullen, you know, really prominent poets during what was called the Harlem Renaissance. And I was wondering if you could, you know, talk about, you know, the place where Joshua ends up, Tolbert County, Maryland, why that place? And then you also, you know, Joshua joins the Union Army, you know, before the end of the Civil War, 2 years before the end of the Civil War, which is right at the beginning because the Civil War was just 2 years long. I mean, it was like, 1863 to 1865 when it was all over with, right? So, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that, and then I want you to introduce, your special guest for Sunday's performance, Matt Kwan.
Okay. Well, we utilize, and I've been fortunate to receive my degrees from Morgan State University back east. And there at Morgan State, I was under the baton of Dr. Nathan Mitchell Carter. And Dr. Carter was was one of the top renowned choral directors in the country on a collegial level as well as a national, international level. I had a chance to record with the Helsinki Philharmonic Orchestra, the London Philharmonic Orchestra, under the baton of Dr. Paul Freeman, and Dr. Carter was the one that brought his choir over to London to do those recordings. I was a part of that. So I had some traditional training from the best masters, I feel, here in the United States to take up the baton and to be a person that highlights the Negro spirituals. Those spirituals were songs that kept us alive during slavery time. I can't express the importance of the Negro spirituals and the key to our survival during that time. So that's why I'm using this avenue music, and I call the play Black Like Me in America, A Musical Journey Through Slavery, because the Negro spirituals actually tells the story from Africa through the Middle Passage up until the end of slavery. Now, when Joshua finally makes it to the shores of the New World, he is sold off into slavery in a place in Talbert County, Maryland. And there he spends almost 20 so years on the plantation working as a person who was forced into slavery. He recalls his life being a slave on the plantation and how the methods that the slave community use in order to take care of themselves and to love one another in spite of their condition that they were in. And that is important for us to still understand that even though this condition of slavery was so harsh on us, we still was a solid community where every adult in the community was an extended mother, extended father. Every child in the community was one of our children. Mm-hmm. So it didn't matter if this little boy down the slave road was Miss Jones' child. If that child needed help, if that child needed nurturing and love, if that child needed something to eat, we was there as a community to provide for one another. And that is important, that some of the messages that I want to bring out in the production.
Okay, nice. So tell us about Matt Kwan. That was a real pleasant surprise.
Yeah, Matt Kwan, Brother Matt Kwan. Are you there, Matt Kwan?
Yeah, I'm putting him back in the studio.
Okay. I met Matt Kwan over in San Francisco. I was on my way from a performance over there in the San Francisco North Beach area. And I saw Matt Kwan, and Matt Kwan say, "Hey, my brother, would you like to check out some of my rap songs?" And I said, Now I hear this all the time, Wanda. I tell you, particularly in San Francisco, you got a lot of rappers on the street with their little CD, but this brother has a authentic thing about him, a sincerity thing about him when he approached me, and my thing is basically jazz, classical, or spiritual music, Negro spirituals, and I'm not really into rap music, but I was open enough to take the time to listen to what the brother had to play for me. Mm-hmm. And right away, almost after the first two or three sentences, I was blown away. I say, boy, this brother is very talented. Mm-hmm. And, it just opened my eyes to all the possibilities that, folks can reach and communicate with one another through this rap genre. Mm-hmm. So I say, man, definitely, give me your number. We exchange numbers. And I say, well, when I get a chance to work with you, I definitely will give you a call. So when we was having our meeting, the committee meeting to plan this production, one of the committee members mentioned that, Well, it would be kind of nice to have something for the youth at the end of the production, since there's going to be a lot of young people there. You know, you might want to have something updated and kind of modern for the young people.
Mm-hmm.
And then the suggestion of a rapper being a part to close the presentation. We plan to have a question and answering period right at the end of my presentation, and then we're going to have Mr. Matt Kwan come on and do a special rap, and then we're going to have a reception after that.
Mm-hmm. So welcome, Matt Kwan, to the air. So talk to us about your work and how long you've been writing and about your publications, because Bryant mentioned that you played some of your CDs for him. So tell us about your work and where you're from.
Okay. My name is Matt Kwan, to the audience out there. I'm originally from New York City, Brooklyn,
mm-hmm.
and I'm here residing in San Francisco. I've been writing songs for about 30 years, something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in the music business since I was small. And now I'm with a company called B&B Entertainment. And I mess with a lot of other people, like Rodney. He's a studio producer, and he made the song for the 49ers. I was a part of that, too, production right there. So I am so happy that my brother called me and introduced me to this right here, this little play that's going on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I have my own CD out here in the Bay Area. It's called Stepping to the L. So I have a little jazz on there, a little thing for everybody, for kids. My special song is called Peace Throughout the Nation, which I'll be doing Sunday,
mm-hmm.
which you heard yourself. And I'm just happy about the whole thing because, you know, it's part of what I'm doing. And the Lord gave me the blessings in the heart and the mind, the body and the soul to do this and write what I do have now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it is right now for me in this world. So, and I really appreciate the time for me putting me on the air with y'all. And doing this thing with y'all, it's really great.
So how do people get a copy of Stepping to the L?
Well, right now I'm in the city. I do have a phone number right now,
mm-hmm.
and the number is 255-5409. That's 415 area code. That's my service, message service. My cell number is 415-308-2743. I've been doing a lot of shows for the neighborhoods out here in the Bay Area. So that's the way you can get the CD from me right now.
Because mm-hmm.
I'm working on getting it better and better manufacturing.
Okay, so what do you have coming up after the Sunday performance?
Can I say it again?
I said, what do you have coming up after the Sunday performance on the 10th with Bryant at Joyce Gordon?
What do I have after that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You said you're busy.
Yes, I have something. I have a show down in Long Park, California. That's where the B&B Entertainment is at.
Mm-hmm.
And the CEO is up here. So they set up a show down there for me to do with some other rappers because they got an album coming out that I wrote a song for. It's called You Gotta Know Which Way to Go. It's on the CD, too. I wrote the whole song, and, you know, they met me on the street, and they heard my song. They heard my album called Stepping to the Hells, and they wanted to know what else I had in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So they stopped me on the streets and took me in the studio, and I had something for them already written. And I got a female to sing the part. She's a young female, 21 years old. Her name is Ashley.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, things are happening because what I do for the community out here and stuff for the community, and they do for me back. So anything that goes on, they call me.
Mm-hmm.
So I really appreciate that, what the Lord has blessed me with.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm. So step into the L. What's the L?
The Tenderloin.
Oh, Tenderloin.
Yeah.
Oh.
I just shorten it and call it the L.
Oh, okay. So
okay.
you live in the TL?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Yeah, there's a film that just came out maybe a year or so ago about the Tenderloin and this mural that this artist painted using the people within the community as characters, and then the filmmaker actually interviewed these people. Were you living there when that film was made?
Yes, I did. And I am a part of a lot of things like that out here that people
mm-hmm.
have done. Yeah. All the sing-along.
Uh-huh.
And I've been on TV, been on cable, the Access Channel,
mm-hmm.
Community Channel. I have a certain kind of songs on my CD that is for everybody. So sometimes when I get a show, it's for a different kind of crowd, older crowd, middle-aged crowd.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm glad I write the way I do write, for it's for everybody.
Right, yeah, wonderful, wonderful. So we have about 5 minutes left. So I was wondering, Bryant, do you want to sing something for us? And Matt Kwan, you want to share, you know, some of your poems with us, maybe a poem or so?
Yeah, I could do. I could speak a little piece throughout the nation for you in a poetry way.
Okay, sure. Why don't you start, and then we'll have Bryant close.
Selection that's from the production that we're going to do on Sunday. What I would like to do is a selection that's a work song. And, you know, when our ancestors was out in the fields working, you know, the master used to say, make a noise and lay on hands. And what he meant by make a noise and lay on hands was to work hard and to sing at the same time to keep the pace of the work. So we sang a lot of songs that the master and overseers like for us to sing because they want us to work hard and appear to be happy while we worked. But there were songs that we sang when the master and the overseer wasn't around that were more comfort to us and was more relevant to our condition as us being in slavery. And the song I would like to do goes like this. By and by and by, I'm gonna lay down this heavy load. By and by, I'm gonna lay down this heavy load. One of these mornings, bright and fair, I'm gonna lay down this heavy load. I'll spread of my wings and cleave the air. I'm gonna lay down this heavy load. By and by, oh, by and by, I'm gonna lay down this heavy load. Oh, by and by, by. Boy, I'm gonna lay down this heavy load.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, I like that part in the play where you talk about how, you know, there were the songs that we sang, you know, for, you know, the white folks, and there were the songs that we sang that nurtured our souls. That was really nice. Mm-hmm, yeah, and, you know, it sort of just goes along in keeping with, you know, you're one of the recipients of the Keepers of the, Keepers of, what's the name of the award you got from the Friends of the Negroes?
Keepers of the Negroes.
Yeah, you got an award from the Friends of the Negroes.
Spirituals.
Yeah, and I forgot the name of it. I don't think it was Keepers of. It's the Keepers of the Culture. That's the name.
It was the Negro Spiritual Heritage Keepers Award.
Right. Yeah. What was that? That was like what, 2 years ago now?
Yes, around 2 years ago, and I was so glad that that organization recognized me as a person who is keeping the Negro spirituals alive and well in our community. That was August the 22nd, 2010, when we did that performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
okay.
Wanda, I did want to leave your audience with my phone number. You might have some people there in the listening audience who might be interested in having this production. This is a mobile production, by the way. We are able to bring this cast to your church, your school, or your community. So we do welcome you to come out on Sunday so you can see firsthand for yourself the production. And if you think it would be something that you would like to have to come to your school or your church or your university, we will more than glad be able to do that. So if you care to contact me, again, my name is Bryant Bowling, and my number is area code 510-393-4010.
Okay.
Again, that's 510-393-4010.
Okay. All right, so Matt Kwan, take us out of here with something wonderful.
Okay, I'm going to take y'all out with a little peace throughout the nation. That's what's going to be there Sunday. Because, you know, we need peace throughout the nation because, you know, we got to save our children in the world. And all those people that's old and aged, we need to recognize that we used to be young before. And we need to take care of these kids out here. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So here we go. We need peace, my friends. That's what we need. Every race, color, religion, and creed. So men, women, teenagers, boys, and girls. Just listen to the words that are for real. You see, you must maintain tranquility from the start in your heart. Have honesty because the truth of the game is to live your life. Don't be so foolish. Just do what's right. See, we all need freedom. We don't want war. No stripes, hostilities, or just fought off. Because the time you heard what's going on about who is right, who has done wrong. Have faith to believe that you'll succeed. Set forth on your way to a better day. You know the world is very large. The land is free. So why be corrupt? Live peacefully. Now, I told you many reasons. I hope you realize that peace and knowledge is the way to survive. So take my advice to think about it twice. So long you have to hurt, have to sacrifice. Let's unite as one, stand real strong. Put peace in your heart and do away with the wrong. And the next time you hear a little something about peace, sing the song to yourself and the pain will ease. Peace.
All right now.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Thank you so much, Matt Kwan. Well, the next time I see you, I have to get one of your CDs so I can play you whenever I, you know, want to, as opposed to just being able to catch you live.
Yes, I will have CDs that day for the people, so it's going to be all right.
Super.
And I also got the 49er song, too, with me.
Okay,
what you know about that bay.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Bryant Bowling.
Okay, wanted to thank you again for having us.
You're welcome.
I would like to leave you and your listening audience with an African proverb that's very aligned to what we're doing on Sunday, and that is a tree without its roots cannot grow. A people without the true history of their past can never be free.
Right, that's excellent. Thank you again so much. And again, Bryant Bowling's Black Like Me in America, A Musical Journey Through Slavery, is going to be at the Joyce Gordon Gallery, 406 14th Street in Oakland on Sunday, 4 to 6 p.m. Donations are appreciated. And again, that's Sunday, February 10th. Should be a wonderful program. And Matt Kwan is going to do that wonderful piece, Peace Throughout the Nation. All right, you take good care, both of you.
Okay, thank you again. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Peace and blessings.
All right. Peace to you.
Good morning, Kim. How are you?
Oh, great. I love the last artist. Wonderful.
Yeah. Matt Kwan, he's fabulous. Really great writer. And we're so happy that you're joining us. You're a regular guest. And I'm so happy you're writing plays. That's so awesome because you're such a great playwright. Black Heaven. So great. And I hope you do get it into that Black Theater Festival that you are sending it to. But I'm glad that you're going to be having, a reading this weekend, tomorrow to be exact, February 9th in Alameda. But let me tell our audience a little bit about you. Kim McMillan has over 20 years' experience of producing theater in the San Francisco Bay Area. In 1987, Ms. McMillan wrote, produced, and directed Voyages, a multimedia excursion into reincarnation at UC Berkeley's Zellerbach Playhouse. In 2000, Ms. McMillan wrote and produced Confessions of a Thespian, When Spirit and Theater Collide, at the Julia Morgan Theater in Berkeley. And from 2001 to 2005, Ms. McMillan produced the Oakland Literature Expo with Penn Oakland as a part of the City of Oakland's Art and Soul Festival. Ms. McMillan is currently working on a stage adaptation of Brazilian director Carlos Degas' 1984 film Quilombo dos Palomares on 17th century slavery in Brazil. Ms. McMillan's radio show Arts in the Valley can be heard on KYOS AM. How do you pronounce it? How do you say that?
We just say KYOS.
Oh, you do say KYOs. It's KYOs. AM Emerson on Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at 2. She is currently enrolled in a doctoral program at UC Merced School of Social Sciences, Humanities, and Arts. And she is going to be talking to us about this black heaven, that this place that she has created that you can visit with her. She's got all these wonderful folks that are a part of this this great heaven. So tell us about the play.
Well, it's going to be at the Frank Betz Center for the Arts, 1601 Peru Street in Alameda. And I'm working on my dissertation, and there are so many people who write about blackness, and a lot of them are not black, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I wanted to have my piece, you know? And I thought of all the wonderful writers that I've read. And so what I did is I took their words, like August Wilson, Alice Walker, Alexander Dumas, and I took their actual words and I put them in the play. And it's a, believe it or not, it's a comedy. Because in the play, God has said that it's a weekly series on blackness. Well, excuse me, not on blackness, but on theater and the arts in heaven. And they have like weekly speakers. The speaker that's happening to come up is August Wilson. So he decided he was going to speak on blackness in heaven. And in the series, people like us who are in the living world, they go to the series in the dream world, and they take back the ideas to us on Earth. So people like Spike Lee, I even put Ishmael Reed and and Alice Walker, Toni Morrison, are in the audience because they take back the words to the world of the living. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like Greek drama in the sense that there's levels. There's one level which are the people from the past, like Bertolt Brecht, Malcolm X, Mark Twain, Ossie Davis, just a lot of black intellectuals, Jean Genet, the author of The Blacks. Well, actually, I'm skipping around. So the first level is like this, the people who passed away and who were literary figures. And then the second level are people who are alive and want to learn more about the arts. Then the third level are the ghosts. And the ghosts are not allowed to speak. A ghost can only speak if the ghost agrees to lift off the veil. Mm-hmm. Then they're allowed to speak. Then we have the historians, which the artists hate. And the historians have their own separate conferences, but they're always trying to get into the writers' conference because they feel that the writers have incorrect information. And they feel it's not historically accurate. But they're always being thrown out. And then we have the critics, which are underneath the floorboards. If heaven had, we could say underneath the clouds. And the angels, which are multicultural angels, have to keep their foot on the board so that the critics don't come out. And so basically, God has said, you know, there's a lot of issues around blackness on the planet Earth. Everyone has an opinion of what blackness is. And so what we're going to do is it's a no-hold-bars discussion on blackness. It's whatever people feel like talking about. And there are certain people in the living world that are very much disliked by some of the people in heaven. And so they're always being warned. Like Spike Lee always comes to these conferences, and W.E. Du Bois and him get into fights. And so W.E. Du Bois said, you know, you cannot do what you normally do. And then an angel whispers to him saying, you know, all bets are off. And Spike Lee can say whatever he wants to say tonight. And then he goes to Spike Lee, you me outside afterwards. You know, so it's a comedy. It's really farcical. But it's talking about what people feel about blackness, you know, how they feel. And even some of the people like David Hume, who's a famous historian, who said that blacks basically had little intelligence, and John Locke, these famous historians, you know, just as they're starting to come up and tell the people that they're not historically correct, W.E. Du Bois quotes their words, and then David Hume gets really angry and says, you can't hold that against me because, you know, I talked to God and I was living in this past where people were uneducated about blackness, so I have a right to speak. But anyway, he gets thrown out no matter what.
Hmm.
And it's a little out there,
mm-hmm.
but and it's also time for redressing too, because I remember when Alice Walker looked for Zora Neale Hurston's grave, and so Zora Neale Hurston's in the show, and so is Alice Walker, and so Zora gets to tell Alice how grateful she is that she found that she put a marker. That she marked her place in history for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always think that when you're past, you want to say things, you want to have a voice and let the living know that you're sorry for whatever you did or you tried your best. And so there's some of that in here in the play, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was thinking about, you know, the play Green Pastures, you know, on Broadway, and that starred, I think, an all-black cast, and it was about black folks in heaven. And I was wondering, that was 1935 that it was made into a movie, I think. But I was wondering if, and then, you know, we got Cabin in the Sky.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I was wondering if you were influenced at all about this whole black heaven.
Honest.
Mm-hmm.
I have never seen Green Pastures. A friend of mine told me about it, mm-hmm. and so I put it on my Facebook, and I'm going to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And Cabin in the Sky, I've seen bits of it, but I always think of those as white people's versions
mm-hmm.
of heaven.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't remember. Have you seen Cabin in the Sky?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have. Uh-huh. I've seen Cabin in the Sky and Green Pastures. And, yeah, it is it's definitely not your black heaven for sure, and it's a I think it is a projected a Eurocentric projection of black people in heaven, but black people doing the same thing they were doing on earth, you know, serving white people.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
So as far as I can see, that is not heaven. That is not heaven.
Yeah, but it's a musical and it's fun.
Heaven in the Sky has Lena Horne in it, right?
I believe so. Yeah, they have, both of them have really great casts.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to actually watch them because I'm kind of curious. I would say probably... this has so much references to literature
mm-hmm.
and what black people did literary-wise in mind and their actual writing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and what we observe. Like I have a piece with Malcolm X. He talks about just the wonder, the joy, and the connection. And he's talking with Ozzie Davis because I believe Ozzie Davis gave his eulogy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I used some of the words that Ozzie Davis spoke. And mm-hmm. These people were brilliant. And it's like the images of blackness, that's why I brought it to historians.
Mm-hmm.
The images of blackness and the literature and the writings on blackness and, you know, things like phrenology, where people decided in around the 1860s that they were going to examine a black person's skull and by that tell how little intelligence the black person had. And so this is kind of refuting the images that we're given of blackness, and the people who are responsible for some of them are actually there, and they're like, they don't want to be held accountable. They're like, we're in heaven now. That's what we did on earth, you know, move on. It is so, and some of the black people are like, yeah, you're in heaven now, but this is our turf, this is our talk, get out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their interest is in what they see correcting some of our perceptions of blackness. And so it's interesting. And then I bring in Virginia Woolf, because and Jean Genet, because they're souls that are tortured, and a lot of them are the ghost. And in the script, Virginia Woolf breaks through the veil, and they ask her, you know, because God says when you can give up the ghost, you can speak at this form, and she gave up the ghost, and they said, why did you give it up? And she said, because of August Wilson. Because I felt his words, I heard him. And she said, when I heard, I no longer wanted to be a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, all Virginia Woolf's life, she was living in Victorian times, where the rights of a female were usurped by society. So you know, there's little things like that in it.
Yeah. I was just thinking about, you know, the sort of the multiple levels of heaven, and then I think about just sort of throwing it out there, Walter Mosley's Tempest Tales, and his character Tempest, he finds himself in line, you know, going toward, you know, sort of the record keeper to see where he's going to end up, you know, in heaven or in hell, and he doesn't agree with the sentence, and so they had never encountered anyone that, you know, wanted to question what the archangel. Yeah, and so they send him back to earth, and they send him with his own little angel, not little, but send him with his own angel to try to convince him that he really does deserve to go to hell. and yeah, and it's really great because the angels, they don't really know what human beings experience, because it's not like sort of the African sensibility of angel, in that an angel is a person who was human at some point, you know, and also sort of looking at sort of the whole spiritual realm, even gods were once human. So they, you know, have a more tangible and hands-on kind of recognition of what we suffer as people. And so it's a really wonderful, wonderful work. And the way you describe these different levels of consciousness, you know, because we think about how this could even be heaven is a metaphor. And then we think about, you know, sort of the African spirituality and Ifa specifically, and I'm thinking about Amos Tutuola's My Life in the Bush of Ghosts, where you look at life as a continuum, and we're really close to the angels, you know, and they're really close to us. So it's all really close, and you talk about how we're participating in this theatrical experience, and, you know, this show while we're sleeping. You know, and you think about how, you know, we you know, there are a lot of different stories around how we travel into different realms through our dreams, right?
And I do believe I've gone to bed and awoken with an entire play.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, how did I get that in my head? And it's like, so that's kind of the idea, that all these ideas perhaps are given to you. You know, because you're the person who can carry the message in your writing, in your art, in your way of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. So did this play come to you in your dream, or did you have to actually, you know, like, did it come complete? You know how Athena was born, you know, full grown out of Zeus's head.
No.
Did this play come like that to you?
No, it didn't come full grown. I'm still working on it. I haven't actually finished it. It's a work in progress, because I find the more I talk to people, the more I get it, and the more I think, like I have an advisor, and we're talking about Virginia Woolf, and I got that sometimes there's issues with women, white women, and suffragettes, you know, the suffragettes, the movement towards equality in heaven. These black people are equal. When they come to earth, they're equal in everything, everything. But in society, how we're treated, we are not treated as equals. Women are not treated as equals. And so it's about carrying that equality inside of you, and through our actions, through our abilities, through our insights, we're changing the world. Mm-hmm. But I like there's a scene in it where Alexander Dumas was not buried in the same manner that Victor Hugo, the greats of France, were, because he was a black man. And most people don't even know he was a black man. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until the 2000s when the president, I'm not sure which one, put him in the burial ground, in the burial place with the great playwrights of France. And why would it have to wait till the year 2000? And that's what he says in the play. You know, I am Alexander Dumas. And they ask him, well, did you go to your funeral? You know, the reinterring. And he says, but of course. He says, I organized the entire thing. They just were not aware of it. But I was giving them the ideas.
Yeah,
but it
yeah.
took that long.
Wow. Yeah, and he, our audience that doesn't know his work, you know, he wrote Three Musketeers. Yeah, wow. 2002, that's just 11 years ago.
Yeah, it's amazing. You think, why would that be happening? Why would this great man be buried in that manner? Mm-hmm. You know? And it was about skin.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Huh. Is James Baldwin
James Baldwin's in there.
Love James Baldwin. What's James Baldwin talking about?
Well, you know, I just added him I added some people recently. Jean Genet and James Baldwin. And I haven't really, I don't think he's set, because everyone has their moments, you know. And so I'm actually thinking of a talk between James Baldwin and Alexander Dumas. And so I haven't written that part yet. But I don't know if you're aware that Cecil Brown wrote about James Baldwin.
No, I didn't know C.C. Well, he is such a great writer. No, I didn't know he wrote about James Baldwin.
I can't remember the name of the book, but it was about time in France.
Oh, nice.
And he lived with him.
He did.
And he talks about, it's a really great book. Oh. He talks about James taking him throughout the town and of France and the life together and the beautiful women around him,
mm-hmm.
and just what an incredible person he was. Have you read anything about James Baldwin's time in France?
Yeah. He writes about it in his Notes of a Native Son, and I've taught that book lots of times. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so Cecil Brown, he just seemed exceptional.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually...
He is exceptional. He is one of our best essayists in American literature. I mean, he is just such a fine writer.
But just talking to you right now, I'm thinking about adding a part with Cecil and James talking together.
Oh, that sounds good since you have a book. Uh-huh.
yeah, so I can actually take it
forward. Yeah.
It just seems like... That's what I want to do with this play. I want to celebrate the black arts.
Wow.
I want to celebrate the great minds who wrote not just about blackness, but about from a soul level, like with W.E. Du Bois. W.E. Du Bois introduces August Wilson, who's giving the lecture, the talk.
Oh.
And W.E. Du Bois, Du Bois talks about. I use lines from The Souls of Black Folk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like they're relevant today.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I feel very lucky, to be able to use these people's words and to say hello to their spirit
and
to believe that, you know, they are still with us.
Oh, certainly, certainly. I'm teaching James Baldwin's The Fire next time in my critical thinking class. And yesterday one of my students, who is not, you know, of African descent, said that the book explained his life to him. And now he's clear. He knows what he needs to do. I'm like, wow, you know, this kid is like, what is he, 18, 19? I'm like, wow. And I'm glad I said, I told him, I'm real happy you told me, because I wouldn't have known if you hadn't told me about the impact of this two essay book on your life.
And you know what that reminds me of?
Hmm.
We were reading Paul Lawrence Dunbar's We Wear the Mask in my discussion group.
Mm-hmm.
And a young Chicano young man said it just felt so strongly. He felt it so strongly. And then a young girl said that her friend's best friend's mother committed suicide, and that she was wearing the mask now because she was walking around like life was okay when her mother committed suicide. And so we wear the mask relates to all of us when we have to wear a mask.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I wanted to mention also that, you know, you have Paul Robeson and in here and Harry Belafonte.
I actually have Harry Belafonte. He speaks, and I have Paul Robeson too.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the fact that Cecil and James Baldwin, I'm going to actually do that, work on that today.
Oh, that sounds really nice. Mm-hmm.
I have to get going, but I hope people will come. It's
I'm
reading with Garrett Murphy, who's just an extraordinary poet. He'll be reading first or second. We haven't decided yet.
Right, yeah. And all of this is going to happen at the Frank Betty Center, 1601 Paru Street at Lincoln in Alameda, California. It's from 7 to 9 on Saturday.
Did you tell him you're reading?
Ninth. Yeah, I'm going to be reading. We haven't decided what part, Alice Walker
or
Neale Hurston. You know, this. You know, your play is really. You have some women, but you have more men than women. You know that, right?
I know.
You gotta beef up the woman part, girl.
you're right. I have to. You know, the Kremke, the one of the first black. A female playwright.
Oh, yeah, I know them. Yeah, they're great. The sisters.
I'll have to add her in. You're right. I need about 3 or 4 more women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to put.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, is Lorraine Hansberry in there?
Lorraine Hansberry's in there.
Okay, what about Ethel Waters or Lena Horne?
No, Lena Horne, but Ethel Waters would be really good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's good. So it wasn't until later life that Lorraine Hansberry really got into feminism. She talked about being, I don't know if she considered herself bisexual or a lesbian, and she talked about it changed her life. She divorced her husband, and so I think she, near the end of her life, she was looking to be her true, authentic self, whatever that was to her.
Right.
You know, and so I've some of her, read a lot of her writings. I greatly admire her.
Mm-hmm.
So she was one of the first people I added, but you're right. I need more women.
Yes, you do. Right, yeah. And I wanted to mention that The Green Pastures is a 1936 film depicting stories from the Bible as visualized by African-American characters.
Mm-hmm.
And it stars Rex Ingram in several roles. And it's I think it was based on a novel called Old Man Adam and His Chillin'. And I think I like that one. And then the other one, the one that Cabin in the Sky, that was about this gambler, little Joe Jackson, portrayed by Eddie Rochester Anderson. He died in a drunken fight, and he awakened in purgatory, where he learned that he would be sent back to earth for 6 months to prove he deserves to be in heaven. And when he awakens, he remembers nothing and struggles to do right by his devout wife, Petunia, who is Ethel Waters, portrays. And Petunia really, really loves him a lot. And an angel known as the General Kenneth Spencer and the Devil's Son, Lucifer Jr., which is Rex Ingram again, they fight for his soul. And it's really, I remember seeing it. It was really good. You would like it.
Great.
It was really great.
I have to go now, though.
Yeah, I know. See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
All right. Thanks a lot, Kim. Peace and blessings.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So that was the wonderful Kim McMillan, and you definitely don't want to miss her work in progress, Black Heaven. Oh, and we have our next guest. I just have all these wonderful playwrights and directors in this particular play. My goodness. A Shadow in the Clouds, the story of Bessie Coleman, written and directed by Victor Lawhorn. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you, Wanda? So I have our performer also on the line with us as well. Natalie, can you hear us?
Hi, yes, I can. Hello.
Oh, hey, Natalie. Are you portraying Bessie?
Yes, I am.
Oh, my goodness. How exciting. Oh, this is
wonderful. I know. It's wonderful. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Victor, I'm going to introduce you first, and then I'll let you introduce Natalie, and then we can talk about this wonderful woman, Bessie Coleman, who was a wonderful aviator, and she died all too young. And this journey that took you 12 years to finish, this journey of writing her story. You are a North Bay Area Artie recipient for Best Director for My Children, My Africa, Solano College Theater, and Best Actor for Flying West. Love Flying West. I love My Children, My Africa, but I really like Flying West. That's a great play that doesn't get done enough. He received an Artie Award for Best Costume for Blues for an Alabama Sky, which he also directed. Oh, I love Blues for an Alabama Sky. You just done all my favorite plays in two sentences.
Incredible plays, and I always kick the jewels, which...
Yeah, certainly. And you received numerous Sacramento's, is it Ellie nominations? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, it's Ellie nominations. And that's Sacramento Regional Theater. They have their own, of course, award circuit. So I've directed pretty much all over Northern California.
Wow, yeah. And you've also, your credits also include critically acclaimed A Soldier's Play. When was that? Where did you do that?
That one was done, done in Solano County it was done in Solano County at their college there.
Mm-hmm.
They have an incredible college program. And using Students and Equity Actors, we did that. And that was back in 2000. That was in 2000 when I actually directed that play.
Okay. Yeah, and then you also directed Laura, The Rose Tattoo, another wonderful work, Night Mother, Raisin in the Sun, Fences, Glengarry, Glenn Ross, Othello, For Color Girls Who Have Considered Suicide, Murder Dressed in Satin, Flying West Again, Steal Away, Tambourines to Glory, and The Colored Museum. You've written and directed for the Myra Theater Guild. Oh, that's a nice company. The musicals Dragonville and Martianville. You're a graduate of UC Berkeley and Western State University of Law, and you practice law in Southern California and the Bay Area. You have practiced law in Southern California and in the Bay Area for over 20 years. So that's kind of interesting. So an attorney that's also a playwright and a director, how does that happen?
Well, it happens because, by day as an attorney, you pay the bills, and then at night you follow your passion. So, over the years, it's actually flipped, and I became more interested in doing theater than in practicing law, to some of the chagrin of my clients that would see lots of costuming and whatever, draped across a conference room. So there's been a lot of mishing of those two particular careers.
Right, yeah. And then Natalie, Autumn Bennett, you portray Bessie Coleman. You're an accomplished actress who has established a strong local following as a result of your numerous leading roles at the Black Repertory Group Theater. And currently you're based in Los Angeles, and you're a member of SAG, AFTRA. We're also are making special appearances at Black Repertory Group to perform in the one woman shows, A Shadow in the Clouds, which is opening tonight, and Tituba. So has Tituba already happened? Because there was a stage reading through Lorraine Hansberry Theater, I think it was last weekend, at the African American Art and Culture Complex. Are you a part of that production?
No, that's actually a different one. I wasn't aware of that. No, Tituba, actually, we open in about 2 weeks.
Oh, nice.
So right after Bessie finishes, we're going to open with Tituba. So.
Okay, yeah, because that's about the Black Witch of Salem, right?
Yes, exactly, yes.
Oh, yeah, that's a real classic tale that not many people know. Oh,
you know, it's funny. I wasn't aware of her story myself, and so once I kind of heard about it, I was immediately intrigued, and you know, I was very excited to be offered an opportunity to do it. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Since you're in LA, have you been checking out the Pan African Film Festival?
I haven't had a chance to do that. No, I'm actually looking forward to doing that upon my return, but I haven't had a chance to do that yet. So.
Okay. Is it going to still be happening? Is it like the whole month? I thought it was like a particular weekend. Is it still going to be going
on? I'm not sure. I'm hoping
it
will still be going on, but I'm not for certain. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you familiar with Danny Glover and his partner's theater in Los Angeles that produces
yes.
Black plays?
Yes, I am. Yes, Mr. Ben Guillory actually
yeah.
is his partner, I believe, and I met with him just a couple weeks ago.
Okay, yeah.
We had a nice meeting with him, and yeah, they're doing good things down there as well, absolutely.
Yeah, right. Well, I just mentioned because that's where you are, so.
Uh-huh, right,
give a
yeah.
shout out to the people who are there and the things that are happening in Los Angeles. It's such a busy, wonderful place. But back to you, Mr. Lahorn, Victor. Tell us about this journey to tell the story of Bessie Coleman, why it took so long, and what people can expect, this weekend.
Well, I can actually add another 20 years, going back almost to 1980. What happened? PBS was doing a wonderful series with Steve Allen, a comic, playwright, whatever. And he, musician, and he actually was the first person who did The Tonight Show before Johnny Carson came on. But anyway, he did this whole thing about, it's called Meeting of the Minds, which I highly recommend. And what he would do is bring in all these historical figures in a roundtable discussion, and they would talk about their lives and intertwine history with their lives. So he'd bring in Cleopatra next to Frederick Douglass or whatever. And I was fascinated by the fact that you could have these historical figures walk and talk and express feelings about what was going on in modern-day society. So I kind of put that in the back of my mind, and I wasn't writing a whole lot then. And then years later, when I started doing writing and I started tackling historical figures, my purpose was not to just do a cookie-cutting approach to information that comes that you might find these days on Wikipedia or whatever, but to try to embody the historical characters with a little life, some fictional, perhaps stretching what I had researched in terms of their lives and making them an embodiment on stage, and that's what we're trying to do with Bessie Coleman.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about her.
Well, the tenacity of this woman to, in the world of 1920s, in essence, to decide not only to become a lawyer, doctor, Indian chief, but to actually want to jump in a plane, which in that time was like the farthest thing from anybody's mind. I mean, planes were a relatively new invention, and to go up in the sky, there had been so many accidents where people had tried to fly, and for her to want to achieve that, and actually to achieve it, and also get her pilot's license, which that was a rarity back then. A lot of people bought planes, surplus planes from the Army, but they didn't bother to get any sort of license. They just started flying. And so she not only decided to fly, she decided to go to France and get her international pilot's license, where she could fly anywhere in the world, which was an incredible feat for a woman who had come from, you know, southern Texas with a very limited education, and to learn French and then to go on, as I say, and become, you know, just a very daring barnstormer woman of the world.
Yeah, yeah. So how is it for you, Natalie, portraying Bessie Coleman, and what are some of your favorite moments in her life and in her story?
Well, I mean, she's an amazing woman. It's an amazing story. I think for me, the challenge with portraying, you know, an actual biographical figure is just getting it right. You know, I want to do her justice and her legacy justice, and I want to be able to portray her in as realistic a manner as I can. And so to be able to do that, I have to, you know, definitely do my research on her and her life and her history and, you know, what things were like for her just back then. And one thing that I think you might want to mention, Victor, or I'll mention it myself, is that one of the reasons she went to France to get her pilot's license was because at that time here in America, they weren't giving them to women, you know, let alone black women. And so there's even a line in the play that where she, you know, kind of explains that. And so she took it upon herself to learn French, you know, in order to be able to go to France and actually get her license. So, you know, she's just really an amazing, amazing woman, you know, all the way around.
Yeah. So why does she want to fly so badly? You know, why does she want to do this?
Well, I think it was just, you know, in doing my research, I read several places that she would tell her mother, you know, that she just wanted to amount to something. You know, she came from a family of 13 children. You know, her parents worked in the field. Her father actually left the family, and so it was really, really important to her to just amount to something, to rise above that situation. And I guess the thought initially came in her mind, or was put in her mind, when her brothers got back from the military. They were in France in the military, and they kind of, you know, were teasing her about how, oh, well, you know, the women in France, they fly, you know, and she kind of took that as a personal challenge. And that was it. You know, she was on her way.
The women in France, they fly.
Yeah.
Wow. So, Victor, talk about, and I want you to chime in too, Natalie, about that whole metaphor of flying, you know, at a time when there was so much, you know, in America that kept black people from being able to achieve and being able to participate in this democracy.
Well, absolutely. I mean, there was, of course, you know, the entire Jim Crow period and the deep segregation, both in the South, but as well as the northern states, and she's in Chicago, and there was just as much segregation in Chicago, although not as blatant. So I mean, what we find in that period of time is that there were so many roadblocks, whether psychological or physical, in terms of deciding on what you could do, where you could go as far as a career.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she certainly saw, you know, with the soldiers coming back, even though they had served the country, they had given their lives, and we're talking about World War I. You know, they went there, they went to France, you know, in Europe, came back, and of course realized the same prejudice that they experienced beforehand. So they came back, did not find jobs, they were reduced to, again, going back to being porters and house servants, and I think she just saw at that point in time that she was going to have to break a lot of barriers, stereotype barriers, and as I said, she probably would have been very successful had she decided to go into medicine or any of the other typical spaces. In fact, she was the best manicurist. She actually won the best manicurist in Chicago. So whatever she applied herself to do, you know, because she had opened up Chili Parlor, she was a really good businesswoman. She had some good business savvy to just try to survive in Chicago during that time. But I think that opportunity to do something so different, so significant, and that no one else was doing. There were several black men who were flying. There were certainly no black women who had flown in an airplane at all. And for her to want to become a pilot, I think everybody, you know, they would either look at her feeling that, what in the world are you thinking, girl? But that was Betsy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Natalie, talk about how society perceived a black woman, you know, in the cockpit, and what kind of challenges she faced yet, and what creativity she employed to be able to follow her dream.
Well, you know, as Victor was kind of saying, it was just a really, really far-fetched notion for a black woman. You know, we're talking, this was like 1915, 1916 that we're talking about, and so it was just really, really far-fetched for a black woman to want to be a pilot. And so, you know, she kind of faced scrutiny and criticism everywhere she went. I mean, this was a time before commercial flights existed, and so if you were going to be a pilot, you had to kind of put on air shows and air performances and do these fancy tricks and turns in the air. And so it was just a really, kind of just a really far-fetched thing for a black woman to have to do.
Yeah, it's funny that part of her promotional was that when she would fly into towns, and she was a barnstormer, so they would fly into the open fields and people would greet them there. Of course, that's where the audience primarily was. They'd, you know, just go out to some, you know, Farmer John's field and know that there were people who were going to be doing death-defying, you know, tricks up in the air. But to get black folks motivated, she actually would sometimes get some of the local ministers, because she was always trying to raise money. She'd actually put them in the Guinea airplane that she flew had two seats. So they would typically charge somebody a small fee to fly with them, you know, as a passenger. But she would let the ministers go up for free so that they could then go back and tout how exciting it was to be up in the air. And, of course, they would go to their congregations and get more people to come out and watch her. So she was, you know, very savvy when it came to promoting herself. But I think as a black woman, now as back then, probably her biggest foes may have been black men who felt totally emancipated by having a black woman do so much that they were,
mm-hmm.
were not
mm-hmm.
willing to do.
And the irony also in that was when she came back from France, you know, with her international pilot's license, she was suddenly a hero. You know, she was greeted by press, both white and black, when she arrived back. And so she became this sort of national hero figure, you know. And it was just ironic, you know, that this was the same, these were the same people who had, you know, criticized her for wanting to do it in the first place.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we're also having some fun with the piece because we're incorporating some multimedia. So I think Natalie's, you know, what you've been doing on stage, of course, I've been pleasantly pleased to know that I could then start tinkering with a lot of the multimedia stuff, and that's, of course, a whole other plane of presentation to an audience, but we're trying to incorporate her performance with actual slides and movie footage. So you're in for a real treat when you come out and see the show.
Mhm. Yeah. Is this a different type of play for you, or you know, having a one woman show and then having the multimedia aspect, which is just as much a part of the program as the live part?
Well, is that directed to me?
You're the playwright. Uh-huh.
I've used multimedia. I've done murder mystery shows and whatever, where I've used a bit of it, but not to the extent that I'm using it in this particular show. So, yeah, this is, and, of course, things have changed. When I first thought about doing this play, when I first wrote it, I thought about multimedia, but the advent of a lot of information and tools of the trade weren't available. Now we've got everything from, you know, YouTube footage, everything else. So you can really show and portray a lot more now than I could have done so 10 years ago in presenting it to you.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't you all share something? Why don't you share something from the piece, Natalie? And then, Victor, if you have a part that you like, you could share something as well.
Natalie.
Yes.
There's a wonderful passage that she talks about the. Something that took place in Chicago that created really havoc. And we're talking about the race riot in Chicago, maybe. Natalie, if you'd like to maybe do a little of that.
Oh, okay. You'd like me to actually to do a little bit of it? Or?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let me just set the stage. So this is, Bessie has come from Texas to Chicago. So she's a new kid on the block, and she's kind of wide-eyed seeing everything that's going on in the city of Chicago in 1919. And this is what happens and during that time.
Victor, are you talking about the part where she went to the, where she went to the beach?
Yes.
Okay. Let me tell you what happened. On the afternoon in July 27, 1919. It was one of those hot Chicago days where women wore so little that they made the Holy Ghost blush. And some of us just decided we'd at least go by Lake Michigan and dip our feet in the water. Well, the commotion started when Eugene Williams, a black teenager, crossed the imaginary segregation line and began swimming off the 29th Street beach. White onlookers walking along the pier started throwing things at him, taunting him for daring to swim in what they considered their water. His fear kept him from coming ashore. He tried clinging to a floating railroad tie, but he drowned of exhaustion. When a white police officer did not arrest the white man who had started the trouble and was responsible for Williams' death, objections by blacks were met with violence by whites. It led to 5 days of rioting in Chicago that claimed the lives of over 30 Negroes and 15 whites. And in total, more than 300 other people were seriously injured.
Yes. So that's a little piece of where she experienced from Chicago early on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do we, in your, within the program, do we actually hear Bessie Coleman's voice? Is that how you created that accent, Natalie, because you actually heard her speak?
No, I didn't actually get a chance to hear her speak. You know, it's, and that's one of the challenges, again, with dealing with trying to portray a biographical figure that's, you know, from so long ago, but... she was from the South. You know, we do know that she was from the South, born and raised.
And what's so nice about it is actually there is no footage of her actually speaking, and there's
really
pictures of her. No, it's amazing. It's amazing during that time that her life was not very well documented.
Wow.
So a lot of information we've had to extrapolate from just general discussion and photos taken. You have to remember back then, even though it was an incredible feat that she was doing, she was not considered part of that whole renaissance, you know, the black renaissance. You know, that was for the intellectuals. They thought of her more as more of a circus act than as someone who had done something so compelling as to go to France and earn a pilot's license.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yes, yeah. She had notoriety. And if you notice, you know, she was a forgotten person for years. After her death in 26, you know, it's not until oh, you know, outside of Chicago, no one had ever even heard of her until we had Jameson, who was the astronaut, the first black woman astronaut,
yes,
who mentioned that one of her inspirations was Betsy Coleman.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, people started talking about her a little more. And then, of course, finally, there was a stamp that was issued with a Betsy Coleman stamp that was issued.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, that's been all that's really been ever said or done with regard to this lady.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. Yeah, because you think about, you know, there haven't been a whole lot of black women pilots. Whenever I fly, I always try to see who's flying the plane. And except flying in Africa, I don't see that many black pilots in America, no matter what airline we're talking about.
Well, you know, there was I think one of the commentators from Fox News who actually got off a plane. I think I heard it, was it last week? When she heard that there was a black woman who was the pilot of an airline that she was getting ready to take a trip on.
Yeah, you know,
oh, wow.
I looked that up, and actually I think that's an urban legend or a parody.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I was going to mention that, and I looked it up just to check it.
Okay.
And it's a fiction. It didn't really happen.
That's true, because that would be really disgusting.
That
would
have been horrible. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I was just looking at some of the names of some of the, you know, famous black women pilots. You know, we've got Betsy Coleman at the top, Willa Brown, Janet Bragg, Dorothy Lane, Patrice Clark, Marcella Haynes, and Jill E. Brown Hiltz, you know, to name a few of the women. But, you know, it was really wonderful when, you know, our sister went, you know, into outer space as an astronaut. It's like, you know, that's like really flying. leave the planet.
Yeah, the connection, and as I say, you know, she planted the seeds for all of these women, you know, the opportunity to open, so they could point back and say, you can't deny me what someone has already done and done well and is the first to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that pretty much quieted the mouths of everyone, and I was glad to find out that even a lot of the, you know, Tuskegee airmen and just a lot of associated, their admiration was just as great toward her because they felt that same segregation going into World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And they could reflect and see everything that had happened in the past. And they were astonished, again, to know that there was a black woman pilot long before the Tuskegee Airmen
mm-hmm.
that had broken those barriers.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's really wonderful, you know, that you're bringing this story to us, and it's really great, Natalie, that, you know, you're portraying this wonderful woman, and then you're going to portray another wonderful woman, my goodness, to all of us. Yeah, tell us about that particular production. But first, before we do that, Victor, your production, your play, A Shadow in the Clouds, the story of Betsy Coleman, opens tonight, and it continues through, I believe, the 22nd. Is that correct?
Yep. Correct. It's at the Black Repertory Theater, and our show is it's 8 o'clock tonight, and then there's a show tomorrow at 3, a matinee at 3 this Saturday, and then 8, and then Sunday a show at 5 o'clock. So that's the opening weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who come to the opening weekend show, we have a very special commemorative magnetic Betsy Coleman stamp that we'll be giving to everyone to come.
Oh, we can put on our refrigerators. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, lovely.
Wow. In her hometown, has Betsy Coleman, has she been honored? I mean, are there monuments to her? Are there plaques? Is there like a Betsy Coleman Day that all the kids get together on these days in their schools and do something in honor of her legacy?
Unfortunately, not. The place where her adopted home is actually Chicago.
Yes.
If you move to Chicago, that's where there's several aviation schools, groups that have formed, and they certainly around the time of her death and birth, they do try to have a Betsy Coleman commemorative day of some sort. But in Texas, to my knowledge, Atlanta, Texas where she was born, I don't believe there's been anything special, no statues or anything like that that have been erected in her honor.
Well, I did read somewhere that they fly some planes around her or over her grave site on the anniversary of her death every year.
When is that? What's the anniversary?
It actually just passed, late January.
Oh, okay. Oh, this is perfect timing, Victor.
Oh, no, was it? Oh, I'm sorry. Is it May, Victor? I'm sorry.
Well, you're talking about her death?
Yeah, her birthday was late January. And the
that's great. It's still perfect timing. Okay.
She's in May.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Oh, what was her birthday?
I think it was the 27th, 28th, somewhere in there.
The 26th.
Yes, thank you.
January 26th, uh-huh.
And one thing about Betsy is she had a very fluid birthday year. She never wanted to admit how old she really was. I don't think that's anything new about what she had to do with her birthday. So, that, you know, I think all of the biographers have had a very hard time just nailing down how old she was when she passed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's okay for Queen Bess. No problem. All right, great. And do you have the address for the Black Repertory Group Theater?
Oh, what is that? Okay.
Yes, it is 3201 Adeline in Berkeley.
And it's near Ashby BART. People can actually do public transportation. And, again, opening night is tonight, and there's a prize for you who show up. I think I'm going to try to be in the audience to get a magnet. And then Tutuola, the Black Witch of Salem, that opens when?
That opens the weekend after this one ends. So I think it's either the 22nd or the weekend after that. I'm not certain.
Okay. All right. So maybe.
I think the Black Repertory Group is would like to extend that because Women's Month celebration comes next month.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they are also wanting to showcase plays that feature women of color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the main thing.
Yeah, I think it's just really fabulous, really fabulous. And I'm so happy that you're able to join us, Victor, to talk about this wonderful work. I'm just really looking forward to seeing it. And, Natalie, I'm so happy that you were able to join us as well to talk about your role in bringing this wonderful story of Queen Betsy Coleman to life for us tonight and this weekend and next weekend as well.
Thank you.
All right. You both take good care. And look forward to seeing you in the theater.
Okay, thank you.
All right, sure. Okay, peace and blessings. So we are joined in the studio by some of our favorite people. we've got Laura Elaine Ellis. We've got Deborah Vaughn. Congratulations, Deborah, on 40 years of Dimensions Dance Theater. And we have LaTanya Tigner, who is another one of our favorite choreographers, joining us to talk about her work. And we've got Raisa Simpson.
Yeah.
I haven't forgotten. And I'm not certain to see. Did I get everybody?
Yeah, I think that's everybody on.
That's everyone.
Good morning.
Okay.
Good morning. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, no problem. So while I pull up your bios, congratulations on 9 years. My goodness, 9 years of Black choreographers here and now. Isn't that amazing? Like next year's your 10th anniversary.
Yes.
I remember when you were thinking about this.
I know. I can't wait till our 10th birthday. I'm like so excited.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I mean,
I'm looking forward
this season. My goodness.
I know. I'm looking forward to this year. It's a great year, mainly because we have the opportunity to celebrate with Dimensions kickoff of 40 years, which makes my 9 years look like, well, okay, I'm just starting the work.
Mm-hmm.
I still have a lot of work ahead of me. So, you know, I still get the props and the bow down to Miss Deborah B. Vaughn. So I'm still solidly trying to follow in footsteps, man. And they are big, big footsteps.
Yeah, but such a young woman. I mean, you know, it's like, really, Deborah? Like, for real?
I know, right? She started when she was like 3.
Of course. Of course. Like, yeah, I had to.
But you know that every year, especially in the city, so you say just 9 years, but then many years, and all the years that you put, on your feet, all the love that you've given in terms of dance choreography, mentally, that's all part of it. So it's,
That's right. Yeah.
And that's for both you and the time.
Yeah. So that means it's been 45 years for you then, or 50.
Yeah. So Deborah, your voice is kind of muffled.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Should I turn off the speakerphone?
Oh, are you on a speakerphone?
I am, because I can hear you, but I can turn it off.
Let's do that. Okay. All so right. Laura, let me introduce you first.
Is this
Laura Elaine, say something again.
Is this better?
Oh, yeah, a whole lot better. Oh, yeah. You have to give the accolades again about the 9 years, because we want to make sure people hear that. So Laura Elaine Ellis is co-founder and executive director of the African and African American Performing Arts Coalition, or APAC. And this nonprofit organization co-presents the Black Choreography Festival Here and Now, or BCF, which is in its 9th year, as we've been saying, presenting this all-community event that offers performances, mentoring, masterclasses, symposia, and special events celebrating African-American art and culture. And they have a website, bcfhereandnow.com. And again, Black Choreographers Here and Now opens this weekend, tomorrow, Saturday, February 9th, 8 o'clock at the Laney College Theater. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
900 Fallon Street.
And it's going to be a special tribute. I'll let you talk about that. And Risa Simpson is the artistic director and founder of Push Dance Company. And she has an extensive performance career in the Bay Area. She has toured and performed with Robert Moses Kinn and Joanna Haygood's Zatko Dance Theater. The last piece I saw her in was Flying Home, or Flying
Sailing
West.
Sailing Away.
Oh, Sailing Away, Flying West.
Yes.
Yeah, Sailing Away, right. When Black folks in San Francisco sailed away to Africa. No, to Canada. Because the conditions in San Francisco were not friendly. And she was really great. Risa was really great because she wasn't feeling well that weekend. But the performance, the show went on, and she was there, and you would have never known that she didn't feel well. And I'm so happy that I was able to catch her that weekend. It was really, really phenomenal performance. Articulating details through the whole body, Risa is an award-winning artist whose work gains a deeper understanding of challenges of mixed heritage by using non-traditional dance forms. Edgy, sleek, and sexy Push generates a fresh perspective from intermingling diverse dancers in raw situations, aptly described as emotional and kinetic changes. And LaTanya D. Tigner has performed professionally with Dimensions Dance Theater as well as Laura Elaine Ellis. I don't know if you both have been performing for over 20 years. Is that true, Laura?
That is true.
Okay.
That is true.
I don't usually admit that, but yes.
And LaTanya is a respected performer, teacher, and choreographer. She runs the Dimensions Extensions program, just seeing those young people perform is just so phenomenal. LaTanya's work, which blends traditional African contemporary and jazz movement, has been performed in Dimension Dance Theater's Home Seasons, Black Choreographers Festival, and San Francisco Ethnic Dance Festival, Congo Brazzaville, and Paris. And Deborah, you know, our star, is celebrating her 40th anniversary as founder, artistic director, and choreographer of Dimensions Dance Theater, which has become widely recognized for its presentation of traditional African dances and contemporary choreography drawn from African, jazz, and modern dance idioms. Dimensions is deeply committed to arts education and outreach and pursues this vital aspect of its mission through Rites of Passage, a comprehensive program serving young people in the Bay Area. And it predates the Ailey Camp by many, many years. Mm-hmm. The Ailey Camp is really wonderful, but, you know, Rites of Passage is like homegrown. It's like right here, you know, and it's just really wonderful seeing the children that have come through the Rites of Passage and their I think it's twice season performances for the community where all the parents are there and their door prizes and raffles, and it's just so wonderful. And it's only one day. It's usually a Sunday at the Malaga Cascalor Center, and if you miss it, you just miss it. But then at least they film it, and you can, if you're a part of the family, you can see it on the video later on because they have these screenings with popcorn and stuff. But anyway, Miss Vaughn has taken dimensions on tour throughout the United States, including engagements at the Los Angeles Olympic Arts Festival, the first National Black Arts Festival in Atlanta, the Forum for Contemporary Dance and Dance for Tolerance Festival in Bonn, Germany, the Festival del Caribe in Santiago de Cuba, and at venues in Jordan, Nigeria, and Zimbabwe. Whew. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Good morning. So perhaps, Laura, you can maybe just sort of outline this weekend and then, you know, sort of what's projected, because I think the festival is 3 weekends, right?
3 weekends long. I can't think of a better way to start this 9th year and then being able to partner with Dimensions this way and celebrate Deborah and all of her work in this community and the legacy that she is continuing to forge with the youth company that you mentioned, and you know, she has members in her company for 20 plus years because she's just a powerful, beautiful person, and so that also speaks to what she has brought to, you know, the company and the dancers who have worked with her over these many years. So it's just a complete honor that she chose to do her kickoff as part of the Black Choreographers Festival. And then on Sunday, we have our pre-professional youth companies. LaTanya Tigna, you will see her work again in that show, along with Destiny Arts, directed by Sarah Crowell. And we have Dr. Abilda Rose is bringing her students, the Village Dancers.
Nice.
And Reginald Ray Savage, Mr. Savage, is bringing his incredible students from Oakland School of the Arts. Now, I know, Wanda, that's one of your favorite shows. You know, you rarely miss the youth matinee. You love that show. Those students bring it. They have so much energy, and the directors work really hard to bring them to that level where they can have that confidence and all of that talent and creativity, and they just, you know, they blaze the stage with that. So that's the first weekend. It's going to be powerful. And I'll let Deborah and, you know, Tanya talk more about that 40th. I'm not going to take all that thunder, except to say it's going to be a party. All right. And then the second weekend, we moved to San Francisco. We're at Dance Mission Theater. They've been our community partners for 7 of the 9 years that we've been presenting this festival. And this lineup of artists just rocks my world. Yeah, we have Beeb Chanel Babeen, Camille A. Brown from New York, Gregory Dawson, who's had a long history with the Lines Ballet Company. He has his own company now, Dawson Wallace Dance Project. Raisa Simpson will be on with Push Dance Company. I'll let her talk about that work, the incredible work she's doing right there in Bayview Hunters Point. And then LaTanya D. Tigner is not hitting the stage alone. She will be with some of the most fabulous men on the planet. Her main partner is Kiazi Malanga, and I'm going to let her talk about the other gems, GEMs, that are with her creating this powerful piece that she's presenting. That weekend is ridiculous. Everyone should make sure that they, you know, buy a ticket for the first weekend and then head on over to Dance Mission for the second weekend. Our third weekend, as always, is the Next Wave Choreographer Showcase. Sometimes I'm told by community members that this is one of their favorite weekends because they love seeing all of the new faces and these artists that are working in their little crevices and tiny little cramped studios, and they get a chance to stretch out on Dance Mission stage. The list is way too long to mention everybody. I'll hit a few folks. Serene Malay and Afia Thompson, most importantly, because they are part of our mentoring program this year. Deborah Vaughn is a mentor. I was actually invited to be a mentor. That was too much for me, but I loved it. And what's also really powerful is they both are telling really courageous stories. Serenity is partnering with Robert Henry Johnson.
Mm.
They're doing a piece that is really being inspired by a legend, Elio Palmare. And he did a piece in the 60s called The Jungle, and specifically a section of that piece called The Junkie. And she's talking about the black male experience in a really strong and provocative way. And then Afia Thompson is dealing with abuse, physical abuse, brought on by members of her family. Very courageous story. And she's doing it as a Cuban folklore, like a fable, a story. And so it's really moving and, again, really courageous. And then we have some favorites like Antoine Hunter on, Rakisha Thompson.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Rakisha Thompson's bringing Tap. We have Jamar Welch coming back, Colette Elwah. And then we have folks like Danny Long. He's coming from Seattle. That's a new face. And so we have some new folks coming on, you know, as well. And then Body Racks, which are these beautiful, full-body black women doing North African belly dance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you call it belly dance. What do you... Deborah, you know that better, that style. So there's some beautiful stuff all 3 weekends. So thank you for letting me share that. I'm really excited about it.
Wow.
And
yeah.
So we have the 9th and 10th, that's this weekend, the 15th through the 17th, that's next weekend, and then our final weekend, the 22nd through the 24th. And I'll just reiterate, tomorrow we kick off at Laney, and then we move to Dance Mission Theater for the last 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Okay. And why don't you give the website for people to get tickets?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you can see the full lineup on our website, and you can purchase tickets. People already know that, bcfhereandnow.com.
Hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. We have to just take a breath, like, oh, my goodness.
Like, yeah, because
wow.
I talk 100 miles a
minute. yeah. So, you know, in the past, Laura, you've had these sort of these forums where you've had a conversation with the community.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have
right.
that this time, too?
Yes, on Sunday, February 17th, the choreographers will all come out after the show, and they'll have an opportunity to talk to the audience, and the audience really will be able to find out more about the process of the work, ask questions about the work, share with the artists how they were moved by the work. It's really gratifying, I think, for the artists to hear directly from the audience, and I think the audience learns and has a deeper experience with the work they've seen on stage when they get an opportunity to have these discussions after the performance with the artists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, you know, that's followed by our cake, our, you know, traditional cake. And then on, you know, Friday the 15th, we will be kicking off some soul food, too, fried fish on Friday, that kind of thing. So we do have those little activities around, as well as master classes, too.
Okay.
Yeah, Chanel Babine is doing a master class sharing with LaTanya Tigner. And there's one tonight with Jamar Welch and Beeb. Over at the Malanga Center. If you go on the website, you can, if you love dancing and mingling with the artist in that way, go to our website and find out more about the master classes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, super. And any films this year?
We're not doing the film fest. Actually, we're holding off on that budget-wise, to be quite honest, because we're trying to do some real special things with the 10-year, and we had to make a choice, girl, economics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a reality, too. So, yeah, we had to pull back from that this year, but we're hoping to do a really nice type of, you know, film festival for the 10-year and getting some community partners to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the last question is about your partner, Kendra. Did she have a baby?
Yeah, Zara. She did.
Zara, like Zara Neale Hurston kind of Zara?
That's not Zara, Z-A-R-A-H.
Oh, Zara.
Yeah,
oh,
Zara.
Pretty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, yeah, she's our newest member of the our dance family here. Yeah.
When did she have Zara?
Oh, it was in December. Do you know the exact date?
December 23rd.
There we go.
December 23rd. Oh, wow.
December 23rd, yeah.
Oh,
two
wow,
days
that's, Oh, neat. Yeah, that's my ex-husband's birthday, and that's Stephen Anthony Jones, artistic director for Lorraine Hansberry. That's his birthday, too.
Oh, wow.
Oh, so she's in good company. Oh, nice. Wow. So, Deborah, I think we'll let you kick off the conversation here, talk about, your 40th anniversary year, and, you know, sort of how one sustains a dance company for such a wonderful length of time, and the various travels that you've had and the collaborations, and just sort of what do you have planned for this 40th anniversary year? I know you had the wonderful program at the end of last year, but what can people look forward to this year?
Well, this year, in terms of the 40th kickoff, we are revisiting some of the dances that helped to establish, you know, the company. So in looking back, we're seeing things, looking at dances that people loved. And so we brought some of those dances back. And we also are going to put a little bit of Down the Congo Line in this program with LaTanya choreographed. But most of all, I think that people will enjoy, you know, just kind of looking at the history of Dimensions Dance Theater. And we have live musicians in terms of the Brass Boppers are joining us. And we also have the drum community that's coming out to perform. And one of the pieces that people so loved was Thompson's work, who is from South Africa, and also Dengani's work, who's also from South Africa. We're doing Boo Dance, Can Dance, Islomi. We have works from some of the choreographers that we've worked with in the past. Fred Benjamin is doing Leftover Wine. We also are doing, let's see, what's another, one of the other pieces that we're doing? Garth Vagan's piece. You know, so we're just putting together excerpts of work that, you know, helped to establish the company's reputation, and also work that people really enjoyed. And it's been really wonderful to revisit the works for the members who were with the company at that time, and then also for, you know, the new members to see and understand, you know, the work and the history.
Mm-hmm. So is this going to be, are you doing all of this on Saturday night?
We're doing all of this on Saturday night.
Oh, that's going to be so beautiful. Just the whole evening is just amazing.
All of this on Saturday night. And then you even get some sneak peeks at our youth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. Wow.
Yeah, there's this one. They do Tanya's Tick Man. We got to come with that South African. We have to come strong because they left that stage on fire. Hey, my feet were singeing in rehearsal last night. I was like, ouch. Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Okay. So it's going to be a lively program, a full program, a fun program, a family program, community-based, you know, with the legend and legacy that Dimensions has created. And you know that our legacy is very much connected to Catherine Dunham and Ruth Beckford.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes.
Because those were the pioneers before us.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. Yeah. And you're a pioneer, too.
Well,
yeah,
I guess so.
Yeah, I just think.
But anyway, in terms of you mentioned the 40 years, one of the inspirations I think for the company is like the vision, and the vision is not just my vision, but part of the vision and the mission of the organization, and people
have just become a part of that. And so the directions and so forth that we go in, it's collaborative. And that's been like a big part of it, collaborating with, you know, other artists, artists that are internationally known, nationally known, and even artists that are part of our community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just sharing that, bringing that to stage, giving youth an opportunity to participate in that, just encouraging whatever it takes to promote what has come from the African diaspora.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. So Deborah, has anyone started filming the Deborah Vaughn story?
No, but I think a book's in progress. Am I right about that, Deborah?
Oh, people often ask about that, and someday I will get to it. But until that happens. Until that happens, I really encourage people to really take advantage of all of these wonderful things and artists that are in the Bay Area. I mean, you know, the Bay Area is rich, and it's we are really a jewel. And I know that many people flock to, you know, New York and L.A., but the Bay Area really has its own groove, and it does. It really does. Yeah. And I just would encourage people to come and support and enjoy, you know, the work that happens here in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, Deborah, with the kickoff of the Black Choreographers Festival Here and Now, where does the 40th anniversary celebration go next?
Well, what I'm really interested in, I'm interested in providing a platform for younger artists to, you know, become a part of the vision and to express their vision on stage, because I think that that's what has to happen, you know? So kind of like, you know, In my experience, the way was paved for me. I think that, you know, Dimensions has, you know, made some strides in terms of making a way for young artists to, you know, come to stage and also to just expand, you know, the artistic leadership with the company. So I think that for me, that's very exciting because, you know, art evolves. Audiences, you know, change. And I think that, you know, as an artist, it's important to pay attention to those things and to, you know, just position ourselves so that we continue to grow and not get, you know, too stuck on or too pompous about, like, you know, what we've done, but it has to continue. And I think that, you know, bringing in new artists, younger artists, I think is the way to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can I jump in there?
Oh, yeah, please. Yeah.
And to, just to add on to that, one of the reasons for the Down Congo Line, which will, to my understanding, will be kind of like the culminating event for the 40th year. Okay. It will happen in October.
Okay.
Yeah, so that will be all four pieces. New Orleans, Brazil, Cuba, and Congo, all on the same stage at the same time. Mm-hmm. So that will be in October at Yerba Buena Center for the Arts.
Nice.
And we'll be having workshops and things leading up to that event like we have done over the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and then, you know, we just have other community events that we'll be doing around the 40th also.
Okay, great. So can people go to your website and stay abreast of what's happening?
Correct.
Okay, give the website, please.
It's dimensionsdance.org.
Can you spell dimensions for people?
DIMENSIONS dance.org.
Okay, super. Well, since you're speaking, LaTanya, talk about, you know, this, you know, it's like, you know, you got us all excited, you know, these handsome men.
That was Laura.
Drumming. Mm-hmm. Well, Laura mm-hmm. got us excited talking about your piece. Mm.
Well, I've had the pleasure of working with Sir Kiazi Malonga for another year to develop the work. Delve a little deeper into the work we premiered last year, which is, was Ndozi, Secrets Revealed, Ancient Secrets Revealed, I'm sorry. And so we wanted to look, I wanted to look into the backstory of his character, which is Nkisi, which is a protector. So what that ancient spiritual lineage is. So I went to the only person I knew who could pull it off. The only person I knew who could pull it off is Yacente Masamba. He's from Congo Brazzaville, currently living in France. Phenomenal musician. Phenomenal spirit. Phenomenal dancer, chanteur. Has a very rich knowledge of older traditional Congolese music, and you know, he is a repository, a vessel for all of that. And so he brings that to the next leg of Ndozi, which is called Bantaka, which means ancestor. And so we've been working, he got in like last week, we've been working crazy. You know, catching him up, and he's been working with the drummers because he's bringing his drum knowledge to the table. Kiavi and I have been in rehearsal. It's been really extremely intense being in the room with those two people at the same time has been off the chain. And I've been telling people you have to put, like, ankle weights on me while I'm performing because I'm not going to be on physically on the stage. I'm going to levitate, and it's just going to be a wrap. So it's going to be crazy. But, yeah, so that's – and then we have some of our core musicians that we worked with last year, Henry, Darian. And then we have another with special – drummer who's coming to us, Bwesa, which is Malonga's youngest son, will be drumming with us. So I'm going to be surrounded by some very fabulous people.
Yeah. Nice. Awesome. Yeah, Risa, tell us what you have planned for this year. You always have something wonderful in store for us.
Yes, I mean, I'm so happy to talk to you again. I think the last time I saw you was actually at the Dimensions Dance Theater performance last year, and that was really amazing, so I'm really excited about 40 years. but I am doing a project about the Bayview Hunters Point Shipyard, and I'm working with six young people whose ages range from about 12 to 24 from the Third Street View Center and Clinic. And together we've been working since September to sort of plan this project, you know, what it's going to look like, how it's going to be shaped, and what roles we're going to utilize throughout this. So they, what I found is that not only do they like to dance, but they really have a passion for making their own music and writing their own music and performing their own music. So their part in it is that they're going to compose the soundtrack, and a couple of them will be on stage with us, actually reciting their own spoken or text. And Push Dance Company's role is to interpret that movement. And I've choreographed a piece that involves a set and worked with the youth on stage direction and the dancers on really, you know, hitting home sort of the energy that they're giving us and vice versa. So it's called Something Left Over from the Last. And the reason why that title exists is because for these young people, one in six young people in the area code 94124 have asthma, and 2 out of the 6 youth that we're working with have asthma. And there's just something there at the shipyard that's been left over from years past that they're dealing with now, and that's what the piece is about.
Them not being able to breathe. Suffocating, right, because of the pollution or whatever chemicals have been left in the shipyard that are polluting that area.
Yeah, as well as the, you know, the, what was it, PG&E plant that was just closed not too long ago. Spewing all this horrible chemicals and particles in the air.
And all those things are mentioned throughout. And I just want to also put out some big, huge thank yous. It might sound like I'm trying to give shouts out, but it wouldn't be possible without the help of the San Francisco Arts Commission, the San Francisco Foundation, and support. I also want to thank Joanna Highgood, Saco Dance Theater. I want to thank Lori Lane Ellis and all the directors of BCF and the staff to really pick up this project, because it was kind of going nowhere at first, you know, and if it wasn't for the support of these other organizations, this piece would not be possible.
Oh, man, Laura, this is going to be just simply phenomenal. So how do you do all the things you do, Laura? I mean, you're a teacher, you're a mother, you dance in, you know, Dimensions Dance Company. Then you do your own solo work. I saw you at Afro Solo a couple of years ago.
A couple of years. Make that about 7.
No. Are you serious?
Some of it I have to step back from. I don't really do the solo stuff. I have projects brewing, but I have to pick and choose, you know, what I do and when I do it. foremost, right now, I have that beautiful 13-year-old son, so I feel like the mommy hat is the first one that I wear, and that is, like, the most joy. But that is the point. Everything that I do brings so much joy to me, and that spurs my energy. So, like, while the festival's going, I don't sleep. That's cool. I stop momentarily to eat. Deborah, Tanya, Rachel, they know what I'm talking about, you know. There's a saying we have at one of my schools, the theater company that we have here at one of my schools. We say, I'll sleep when I'm dead. You know, like when you're production, you don't sleep. That's cool, because what you get back is invaluable. Like, I can't put a price on that. I really can't articulate it, because it moves my heart so much that my mind and mouth can't even wrap around, you know, the pure joy. That's the word that comes to mind, or the words that come to mind, pure joy, presenting this festival, presenting an opportunity for artists to do their work, to have their vision, you know, that really is the mission of AAA PAC, and it's the purpose for this festival. So when it's working, best is when those artists feel like they're really being supported. And it isn't always easy. I'm not going to beat this point, because we all know it, working in the arts, but funding is really challenging. And I appreciate Raisa bringing the shout-outs. I should also mention that San Francisco Foundation has come through again to support us. There were some other foundations, I will not name them, that did not. They don't get it yet. But that's okay. Hopefully they will by our 10th year. But then I don't do it alone, Wanda. There are amazing community partners like Dimensions Dance Theater, like Laney College Dance Mission Theater, my fiscal sponsor, ODC Theater, Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, the staff and directors there that have been excited about this festival and allies to this festival from the beginning. That's what makes this festival work. The artists that come through with their amazing work, their patience, because we are grassroots. We have our challenges sometimes around organization. But working together, we bring to the community a really special event. It is fun. It is exciting. And that's the other part. This festival does not work if the community does not come out. We need to have those audiences, folks. So go to the website. Get the tickets. Show up for us. Get out of your living rooms. Get away from that computer, your Facebooking. Give it a break for a moment.
come see live theater. The live music, the energy, the dances, this stuff is no joke. It is beautiful. It is impactful. It's inspiring. It will move your spirit. So show up for us because we have, like Deborah said, we have a rich, rich presence here in the Bay Area, and we want to share what we love with our audiences. Did I kind of say that right, folks?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
I think
absolutely.
So.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely, yeah. So in closing, I want to let everyone have an opportunity to echo Laura and just talk about sort of the importance of art and art making, and particularly since all of you all are dancers, you know, just getting up there and moving. You know, why? How that sort of helped you sort of work through some things, you know, some challenges, personal challenges and loss and sorrow. How you know, just the whole thing around moving and dance and art, how it's helped you, you know, work through some things and how it's helped you be patient when your body wasn't cooperating. Because, you know, Risa, you've had some challenges with a disability, and sometimes your body just wouldn't cooperate. But, you know, you're dancing again, you know, so it's like, wow. You know, and Deborah, you know, the loss, you know, of your daughter is just like tremendous, and yet we still see you in the community, and it was just so cool last year seeing you dance. Oh my God, playing that character, you know, that old woman. Yeah, right. Who like just got her boogie on? You know, it's like so fun.
Yeah. Well, I will say this is that. I think that for artists, like when we can tap into another realm, you know, which is like our creativity, it really draws on everything that's within us and everything that's around us, which like connects us. And hopefully, you know, as we live that and perform that we will be able to draw people into, you know, that place, that space where they can, you know, just be a part of the whatever experience an artist has to offer. Because we know that it touches the soul. You know, we know that it touches the soul. One of my difficulties and challenges is why funding doesn't really support, you know, artists the way they should. And piggybacking, like we have a lot to be thankful for in terms of the foundations that have supported us. Many, Hewlett, I can't even name all of them, San Francisco Foundation, many, Zellerbach. But there is so much more that can, you know, be supported, like from our community, individual donors, people buying tickets. It's tremendous. You know, it helps organizations stay in the black. So just come and experience. It transforms you. So I just, you know, invite people to be part of what the Bay Area artists have to offer.
Okay.
So that's my little bit.
Beautifully said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, LaTanya?
I just want, for me, because it was such a life-altering decision to do this thing we call dance, and it just shifted everything I had set out to do as an 18-year-old. And so working with the kids that we work with and seeing them literally transform before our eyes from someone who barely spoke to anybody to someone who is gregarious on stage and who is excelling in school and making decisions, becoming leaders within their peer group, and then going on to do wonderful things in college is, you know, something people don't really attach that to their development or their being raised in art through dance. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, and because it's a lot of discipline, especially here at Rites of Passage. it's a discipline in the studio. It's a discipline when you come into the office. You have to speak to people. You know, you have to respect your elders. And it's a really a village community here. And to see the kids come in and be raised and through dance and then go on and do great things in their communities is wonderful. And to see them make great decisions. And even if they falter a little bit, they know what they can come back to. So just like it being that to me, in addition to the work that I'm doing for myself, for selfish reasons, being, you know, delving into the work that I'm doing, you know, with Kiazi, just seeing the youth being able to use those tools to go forward in their lives, if they want to dance or not, but being able to use those tools that they've gained in whatever program. A great dance program is a great dance program, you know. So being able to use that to go forward and give back, make sure they come back, and then make sure the next person under them has an opportunity, you know. So reciprocity.
Mhm. Yeah. Okay. So Risa.
Well, I just think that, you know, piggybacking on what everybody said is so true. And you mentioned, you know, the last year I was walking with a cane, and this year all of a sudden I can walk up some steps, and I'm just feeling like, you know, our bodies, you know, are definitely important. And I think that as a society, we sort of think of it as a second thing. We kind of take it for granted, and we'll go ahead and sit down in front of the computer and Facebook and do absolutely nothing. But to meet people in person and just be around other bodies and contact and communicate, you know, that's why I step into the studio every day. It's just so that I can just look at people and see them face-to-face and engage with them. And that's why I think that live performance is so important, is because now, instead of these social networks, we just need, you know, an actual network of people that come together, and that is part of a tradition, it's part of a ritual, and we shouldn't forget that. And, you know, every time I mention, oh, I'm doing the Black Choreographers Festival, you know, people are just like, oh, thank goodness, getting together, you know, just being around people that you probably haven't seen, you know, all year, sometimes like 5 years, sometimes even longer. So, you know, it's just a real blessing to have, you know, mobility and the things that we have. And it taught me a lot. You know, one day I turned to my dancers and I said, you know, I'm really counting on you to get this right, because this is the only thing that I'm good at.
Oh, that's great. No pressure, right?
Right. No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure.
You know, but what I was saying is that, like, this is important. This is as vital as you waking up in the morning, is just being here and, you know, presenting what you've been working on all year long to do. And you just really have to, you know, make the effort. You really got to commit to it. It's not something that, you know, you got to just put on the side because you got to make money. It's like, no, this is not about that. This is about something different. So, you know, the support that's out there, it's definitely dwindling, because it's definitely in demand, and it's something that we got to seriously take a look at. If it is in demand, then we should be increasing it, not decreasing it. So that's what I'll say on
that. Amen.
Wow. Well, thank you all so much.
Wanda, thank you. And it's support like yours helping us get word out. There are other amazing journalists who come out every year to support us. You know, the Bay Guardian and from East Bay Express. This year, the QED came through for us, as did Dance Magazine, a national publication.
Wow.
But
But again, you know, Wanda, you've been there from the beginning, and you come to as many shows as possible. It's great seeing your face, seeing your camera click, and you're one of the journalists that follows up and gives us a review, too. And Deborah can, you know, attest to this. Having those previews and reviews are also that's a great support for us, because that tells our funders and tells the public that that we are valued and that we matter to the critics and the people who are given the task of letting community know about what's important,
mm-hmm.
you know, for them to participate, you know, what's the word, to be a part of, right?
Mm-hmm.
To go
yeah,
out and
definitely.
See.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, you know, we set our clocks by you. you know, it's like, Black choreographer is here now. Okay, that's like it's they should, you know, they should make date books with your weekend already in there, so we don't double
okay.
book it. And then dimensions. You know, 40 years. Oh
Hello?
My goodness. You know, you're part of the dominant discourse, and the RISA with push. Oh my goodness. You know, you're just like fabulous.
Like
fabulous. And
so
LaTanya, you are just, I just, everything about you is fabulous. I mean, your sense of humor, you
yep.
know, your sassiness, you know, the your drill sergeant command of those young people.
In the pink hat.
Yes, in the pink hat. Yes.
yeah,
in a pink
yeah.
hat, you don't talk to her.
and the way, you know, you just really represent my hometown, New Orleans, you know, and all of its different
what?
Aspects, you know, from Congo through
That's
New Orleans
Orleans.
To the, hmm?
Didn't know.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh, it's my hometown,
oh,
yeah. yep.
that.
My whole family.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like everything you do is like a personal thing. Just like, you know, with Moosey Congo and her family, you know, Malanga's
mm-hmm.
like, you know, Congo, New Orleans, you know, it's like
mm-hmm.
a connection.
yeah.
yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much, Wanda. This has been a thrill. It's been a joy talking to you.
Oh, it's been great speaking to all of you, and I look forward to seeing you on stage.
And I'm glad all these fierce woman could join me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, like the day before. You know, like, that
mm-hmm.
is such an honor.
Okay.
All right. Well, all of you take good care. Looking forward to seeing you in the theater.
Thank
you. Thank you,
all
right. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thank you very much, Wanda.
Oh, you're
mm-hmm.
welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Mm-hmm.
Peace and blessings.
Bye. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye. So we're going to play a song, and I'm going to make a couple of more announcements. I'm going to play Nawal's Hema because I went to see a film. It was the closing evening of film at the Pacific Film Archives African Film Festival, and I was watching a film about an elevator in this big, huge, huge building in Johannesburg, a building that formerly, before apartheid was ended, was just an apartment for white Afrikaners, and then after apartheid ended, this 450 apartment building became sort of like the UN of South Africa, in that the people that lived there were a lot of people, particularly from outside of South Africa. It was a place where they could live, and it was affordable. They could have at least four adults to one unit, and they had this big elevator. And the filmmaker sort of interviewed, you know, the various residents of this place, children, adults, and we were just sort of included in these stories. And then the building was sold. And the people had to move out, and then the project didn't work out. It was sold to a European, and then the project didn't work out. But meanwhile, when they were out, some people couldn't find housing, and then there was a lot of xenophobia related killings of people. And then some people moved back when the project, like I said, didn't work. So I say all that to say that there was a wonderful score. And as I was watching the film and listening, I was like, oh, I know that voice. I know that singer. And it was Nawal. Nawal, who is living in Paris, but she's from the Comoros Islands to the east of southern Africa. and she was singing her Hema, and I happen to have that in the, as a part of my studio soundtrack. So I'm going to play Hema, and then I'm going to come back again, as I mentioned, and tell you about a few other events that are going on this month that has too much going on. So here's Hema, Nawal.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
About this wonderful event. There's too much happening on Saturday night. It's called Tease Harmony, Raw Talents Presenting Tease Harmony, a spoken word theater piece by Richmond Youth. And that's Saturday, February 9th from 6 to 9 at El Cerrito High School Theater, 540 Ashby Avenue in El Cerrito. And the keynote speaker is going to be Louise J. Rodriguez. And you can buy tickets at teaseharmony.eventbrite.com. And tickets are $15 for adults and $8 for youth. And you can get tickets at the door as well. And they go up a couple of dollars, actually $5 for adults. So it goes up to $20 for adults. And it goes up $2 for youth. So it's $10 for youth at the door. Okay. And then also the Ubuntu Shared Humanity Awards presented by Priority Africa Network happen on Saturday, February 16th. at the Terrace Room, in the Terrace Room at Lake Merritt Hotel, and that's 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. And the Terrace Room at the Lake Merritt Hotel is located at 1800 Madison Street in Oakland, California. And the keynote address is given by Dr. Amina Mama, Nigerian author and professor and human rights advocate. And the musical performance is by Felicia Chow from Cote d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast. And the MC is Minister Greg Hodge. The honorees this year are Malanga Cascalora Center for the Arts, that's the organizational honoree, Emmanuel Nado from KLW Radio and Echoes of Africa, Eritrean Youth for Change is the other honoree, and Dr. Siri Brown from Merritt College is also being honored. And for tickets, you can visit PriorityAfrica.org or call 510-654-1493. You can also email info@PriorityAfrica.org. And you can visit WandasPicks.com for other events. Let's see what else is going on. KQED celebrates Black History Month, and they have some really wonderful programming. And you can visit them at pbs.org to see what they have special happening for this month. One thing you definitely want to catch is the film honoring the legacy of the Honorable Whitney Young. We had his niece on, and she was talking about this film, which is having its premiere on PBS through ITVS network on February 18th, and the film is called Power Broker, The Power Broker, Whitney Young's Fight for Civil Rights. And that is just going to be simply phenomenal. And if you missed the interview with Bonnie Boswell, definitely go into the archives and check it out for February the 6th. And we're going to play another song from the Putumayo Presents Women from Africa. And I'm going to play Sinamali Sina Dine, which is another song I really like from that particular compilation. my goodness, that's, isn't that a lovely song? It's just so spirited, even though I don't know what she's saying. I mean, there are little some notes in the in the program, but I don't have it right handy right now. But I want to also mention it's another it's an opportunity for us to get together and network, and this really wonderful continuation of making connections, which is something that our Board of Supervisors member Keith Carson started and when he had this wonderful event. And this is the second annual African American Organizations Making Black Connections event. And this time, the first one was at Merritt College, and the second one is happening Saturday, February 23rd at Laney College in Oakland. It's a free event, and it focuses on networking in the African-American community and highlighting the importance of bridging the networking gap between younger and older African-Americans. It will cover the current state of affairs in the African-American community and will include important panel topics such as strategies and outcomes of the black community, black men and women, how do we strengthen our communication amongst each other, a black community as one, intergeneration relationships panel, as well, I mean, a panel, but workshop and panel topics, as well as business and job creation, workforce development. This event, again, is happening at Laney College, February the 12th, so it's coming up, and it's from 1 to 2:30, and it's in room F200 at Laney College, and it's going to be really, the first one was just really phenomenal, just great having all these folks in the room, and Dr. Wade Nobles is going to talk about the next frontier, mental liberation, to be African, to be family, and to be awesome. So, you know, what a great Black History Month event, and what a great way to start our year as Africans. If we say that we start our years in February, you know, we start our journey, we start our sojourn, you know, this is the beginning of the year for Black folks, you know, which, you know, we have a whole lot of multiple ways we can start. So this is another opportunity to start, you know. So January 1st, 2013 was the 150th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation, and it's a day that our ancestors celebrated as the Jubilee. It's a day of freedom and liberation and, you know, not letting things hang you up or hold you down. And so here's another opportunity. February, you know, Dr. Carter G. Woodson, and, you know, wanting to have a month, first have a week, where first it was just a day, you know, where we honor our legacy as people of African descent. And, you know, when African people do something, the whole world benefits. When African Americans do something, the whole United States of America benefits. So the legislation that ended legal discrimination and allowed black folks to have equal access to all municipalities and all different types of structures and institutions, that benefited everybody. People are still benefiting. You know, on the 50th anniversary of Martin King's speech, I Have a Dream, people are still benefiting from, you know, him putting it out there about the check, you know, having bounced, you know. But the Bank of Democracy, the bank is not, doesn't have insufficient funds. It's just, you know, our check wasn't being honored. The check wasn't being honored that we were issued. And it's still not being honored to a lot of degrees. We talk about Bessie Coleman, and we think about how many women aviators of African descent are there. You know, how many jets have you flown on where there was a black woman sitting in the cockpit flying it? I can't think of one instance in these United States that I've gotten on an airplane and a black woman was flying the plane, or a black man for that matter. So there's a long way to go, but we've certainly made strides, and definitely we want to network with each other, and we want to make it out to events like the play tonight, where we look at our Queen Betsy, you know. So definitely try to get out to the Black Repertory Theater and over the next 2 weeks and see this great play, this great original play, and then, you know, keep on going and go see, you know, the play about Tituba, you know, Black Witch of Salem, and what happened to this woman, and certainly catch the next frontier, mental liberation, to be African, to be family, to be awesome, and Dr. Wade Nobles, who is presenting as a part of this African and African Americans making connections, organizations making Black Connections event. And again, that is a free event. And so that's going to be really exciting, and I hope to see you there. And, you can't forget Black Choreographers Here and Now and celebrating Dimension Dance Theater's 40th anniversary and an evening of sort of like audience favorites. Isn't that fabulous? And then tonight, M.B. Hanif is going to be performing at the 57th Street Gallery, which is a place where they got so much going on, you know, musically. And our brother Bryant Bowling is going to be singing. And then on Sunday, he's going to be doing his thing, with this character Joshua, taking us, from Africa through slavery and out of slavery into liberation. So just so much, so much, and we could go on and on, but we aren't. I'm going to close with maybe another one from this musical CD that that Nawal is on, that just happened to have another one there, and I'm looking for it. See if I can find it. let's see. Mama C's coming to town. Yeah, Mama Charlotte, she's going to be in town. And there's so much great things. There's so many great things happening at Marcus Books. Oh, my goodness, some great, great things happening. Maybe we'll play a little Michael White, Journey of the Black Star. The Blessing Song. We'll play the Blessing Song with Michael White. Here we go. So thank you so much for tuning in for another edition of Wanda's Picks. Looking forward to having you join us again on Wednesday morning. Peace and blessings.